All right, we are at Xamarin Evolve 2013. Miguel Diacosta, nice to see you again, man.
Nice to see you again.
It's been, last time we chatted, I think, was in Vegas, huh? Mix?
That's right, that's right. But we also remember you had a very nice, cozy studio in Redmond, I think.
Yes.
You had a nice, cozy studio back then. I like that. I like that. That
right
nice.
On. That I think that was Compiler.net.
That's when I met you.
Yeah. Yes. Compiler.net. Exactly.
Yeah, Lang.net.
Lang.net, man.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So, and back then we were talking mono.
Yeah, we're right? Still talking variations of it, yeah.
Awesome, still talking so about that. Take us through, what have you been up to since 2006, man?
Well, we improved mono. It was, you know, I think that back then it was an interesting project with a lot of potential. And, you know, 6 years of polish and improving and growing and hearing what problems people were facing and things that people wanted to do with it have really taken to new places. And we now put Mono on some very interesting platforms. We put Mono on Android, we put Mono on iOS, and Macintosh. And the way that I see it now is now we got C Sharp, which is a language I love so much. I mean, I love Anders, and I love Anders Helsberg. Yeah. I love what he does. So now you can use C# across all major platforms. You have Windows, which is of course leader in the desktop. You got the Windows Phone coming out. You got the new delightful tablets, the Surfaces, and then we complement the Microsoft Story with iOS, which I absolutely love. Like I said today on the keynote, I have a crush on iOS and what those guys have done. I love what Google has done with Android, and of course the Mac is perfect. Mm. And you know, a little thing, although we're not focusing on that space because we're very focused on mobile, Mono runs on pretty much every gaming console out there. Runs on the Raspberry Pi, runs on the PlayStation Vita, runs on all of those unannounced pieces of hardware, exciting piece of hardware that people talk about. So I am just so happy to kind of having taken that vision of of C#, the standard C#, the language, and I knew you guys wouldn't really do the work for other platforms. So I'm happy that we help bring C# to pretty much anything you can think of now. If it has a CPU, we can put C# on there.
Awesome. So, well, it's a beautiful language, man. There's no denying that. That said, it was a language built for .NET. So when they were inventing .NET. Mm-hmm. In the late 90s,
yep.
They needed a programming language, and that programming language was C#. So there would be no C# without the advent of the CLR and base class libraries.
That's right. And Mono is a CLI implementation. So we have a complete compatible CLI implementation. Mm. Today we talked about bringing F#. F# actually posed some interesting challenges. There were some interesting challenges in bringing F# to the table, make sure that it runs on iOS, because F# is very generics heavy. And so we came up with some very interesting technology. I'll talk about that on my session today. But
cool.
We brought some very interesting technology to make F# happen. So.
Awesome. I mean, and you just, like you say, you just announced it. For Xamarin, you now support F# as a first-class programming language.
That's right, yes.
In addition to C#.
Right.
So let's kind of talk a little bit about before you made a lot of very interesting announcements today. Mm-hmm. I mean, just let's catch people up to Xamarin itself. So, you know, what is Xamarin? When did you guys start it? Take us through a little bit of that.
So there was an mentioned in the keynote. There was an interesting event in May of 2011 when my previous employer developed Mono, decided that they were no longer interested in it. So I talked to Nat on the phone. I said, hey, Nat, we've been talking about doing a startup, but you're still going around the world, and I kind of need to do something now. And the opportunity is taking Mono to all these exciting devices. These are so many iOS and Android devices. It was a hot topic at the time. And Nat, who had planned to spend another 6 months traveling the world, basically 48 hours, he canceled his vacation, his planned vacation that he had planned for years, and flew back to Boston with his wife. Mm. And we started to put together the company. We started to put together an initial investment. The two of us put our savings into the company. We talked to our previous employer, to Novell, Attachmate, and we negotiated a deal that was beneficial for them and for us. So we get the rights to the Mono IP. They got all the support that they needed for their existing customers. Mm. And you know, we were, right, Novell and Attachmate were focused on the IT business, which is different than the developer space. They're very different businesses. So now we're free to completely focus our attention on the developer space. And like I said today, our goal really was C# is this delightful, incredibly beautiful language to use, so nice to use, so pleasant to use, that now what we wanted to do is basically complete that story, because developing is not just about writing the code. You want to publish the code, you want to write the code, you want to you want to prototype the code, you want to test that code. So our vision was, we wanted to bring kind of the same taste, the same graceful test of C# and kind of the same graceful test of the iPhone to everything in the developer space. Mm. And we felt that there was a nice void in the space. Obviously, Microsoft is interested in selling Windows, Apple is interested in selling iPhones, Google is interested in selling ads, and kind of there was nobody really interested in just developers. So we figured, let's be the Apple and the Anders Helsberg of developer space.
Interesting.
So that was kind of a... That's the inspiration. That is the inspiration.
Excellent.
And, you know, judging by what we've seen today, I know that, you know, I love that you can write, you know, that you've involved Visual Studio in the equation. Mm-hmm. You've involved, of course, you've written your own Xamarin Studio, which mm-hmm. the demos today were very impressive, and particularly iOS Designer. Yeah. Incredible work on that.
It is coming to Visual Studio.
Awesome.
One step at a time.
Understood.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things, if I'm using Visual Studio and I'm using Xamarin, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to want to have access to a lot of third-party libraries and a lot of, you know, the RBCL and stuff like that. This kind of obvious stuff. Custom libraries I've written.
Right.
How does that work in your world? So
there is today, and there is where we're going. So okay. One of the things that we didn't have time to announce for this keynote, so I'll pre-announce it because we've talked about it. We were just a few weeks short of the QA deadline, which is a shame. Had we had a couple more weeks, we would have announced BCL support today.
Wow.
So we're about We're about a month off now from having BCL support. So if you have a BCL library, it will run on our stack.
Nice.
We have kind of a hacked, stitched together BCL support now, but it's not real. It doesn't. With a dozen hacks, you can make it work, mm-hmm. And some people are using that. But we want an out-of-the-box experience that is just perfect. So PCL support is coming, I would say, roughly in about a month, because okay. it involves QA. QA needs to go through their whole thing. So so it is coming, and we're very, very excited to work on that. Actually, we couldn't have done that without the help of the Microsoft staff. They took the time, and they had all the patience in the world to walk me through this a few times, because at the beginning I was very confused. I talked to Mirza, I talked to David, and they were just absolutely fantastic, and they answered my questions over and over. With so many things happening in my head, every once in a while I would ask the same question. I already told you, but there would be, you know,
sure.
They walked me through this process. So it's almost here, and we're very excited to get PCL support.
Awesome. And, you know, I can say this. I mean, you know, on behalf, the Visual Studio team loves what you're doing with Xamarin.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We love Visual Studio.
Hey, man, it's one of the best IDEs in the world, I think.
I think it is the best
IDE. It probably is. Thank you.
We did Xamarin Studio because we do need to have a solution for people using a Mac, and Visual Studio doesn't run on the Mac. So we do need to have a native solution on the Mac. And also, we need a solution when people, since we have all these add-ons to Visual Studio, we need Visual Studio Professional. And some people don't have that. So we needed Xamarin Studio to fill that void, and definitely to have a good experience on macOS. So we're doing both, but there's no question that Visual Studio is the IDE. It is the best IDE in the industry.
Well, I've been playing around with Xamarin myself, and what I've done is I'm a big fan of Parallels, especially mm-hmm. in coherence mode. I love coherence.
Yeah.
And so it really is like Visual Studio on Mac. And then I don't have to worry about having a Mac next to me. I can actually program again.
That is right. Yeah. Right. I just wanted to be very clear that that you need to have a Mac, because a lot of people think, you know, I'll just put it on my Windows machine, and they're like, oh, I need to get a Mac. It's just, I wanted to set the expectations. You'll get a product, but you also need to go to the store and pop one of these puppies, hook it up.
And is that because you can't, it's illegal to use Apple OS in a virtual machine?
Well, there's a couple OSX? Of things. The license, I don't want to talk about illegal. The license is very clear. Yeah. I'm an open source guy, so I've grown up with these respective licenses, right? So open source licenses have like different parameters, like there's 100 of those, maybe 20 very popular ones. Mm-hmm. And I spent the years of my life understanding the nuances of each one and what is allowed and what is not allowed. And Apple says they're very clear about this. If you want to run OS X, you need a Mac on it. So if they say you need a Mac, you know, we're very respectful of that. You need to have a Mac. The second thing is that there's also a technological component. We do need to use the Mac tools to build, to code sign, to do a lot of these things. So while some people have definitely came up with alternative SDKs, we'd rather not play, what is this? Hide and seek? No, catch, mouse, catch. Mm-hmm. We'd rather not be chasing that. We'd rather focus on where our expertise is. And just use the Apple tools. Apple does a great job at building those tools. There's no need for us to, it would be a waste of our time to try to reproduce those tools. So we just use Apple tools. So you do need to have those tools there, and they only run on macOS.
And those specific tools, in this case, you're really talking about the compiler tools. You're not talking about their IDE tools.
It's actually the libraries. There's a library, the code signing, the provisioning, all those sort of things. So we use Apple tools, and we also are very respectful of their licenses. And you know, we're very respectful of Visual Studio licenses. We're very respectful of all of that. So you know, open source that does that to you. You understand the nuances in licenses and copyright and all of those things.
Okay. So. And so Xamarin itself is not open source, but it's based on open source technology.
That is correct, yes.
And so I know a lot of people were, you know, hey, Miguel, I remember we would talk and you were very excited about open source. You guys should open source IE. Why not? But so my question is this. You're built of open source technology.
Yes.
Right? People can go and inspect Mono and Mono Touch and Mono Game. I mean, that's always been what you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. But you've got to have some amount of IP or closed source.
That is correct. Absolutely. So we learned very early on that pure open source was very difficult. In fact, it goes back 11 years with our first company, our first open source company. Mm. It was at the height of open source, and I remember thinking, we're going to build this email client. It became a very popular email client called Evolution. It's used in all Linux distributions. Mm. And it was the height of open source, of camaraderie, of everybody's working together towards a common goal. Red Hat had just IPO. There was a lot of money on the Linux space. And very early on, I remember we were talking to Red Hat and say, hey, we built Evolution, it's open source, but we would like you to pay us because we're all in this together. Mm. And Red Hat said, we don't have to because it's open source, so we'll just take it. But actually, we're going to give you exposure, so you have to pay us. So that was a little bit of one of the first shocks. Is like, oh, wow. I thought we were all in this together. So very early on, we knew that we needed to do some proprietary chunks. So Evolution actually ended up shipping with proprietary plugins for Exchange, and we started building proprietary software for Linux management. And that's when Novell acquired us for our proprietary, in part for a proprietary technology for Linux software management. Mm. So it's been about 12 years. But the way that I see open source is there are places where you would have a strategic advantage to open sourcing pieces of technology. So even if we talked about open sourcing IE, it was after my realization that not everything could be open source, that you couldn't fund everything out of open source. Mm. My thought at the time when we discussed this open sourcing of IE was very, very strategic. Microsoft could benefit a lot by open sourcing the engine. I did not see IE as having a tremendous amount of proprietary value. I think that Windows had a lot of proprietary value, but IE, there were choices, there were people competing in the space. Mozilla kind of commoditized the space, so I felt that there was very little value in IE doing that. And I think that had IE being open source, we wouldn't be talking about WebKit today. So, and now we kind of talk of WebKit and Google's fork as the as the standards. What's it called? Glink or
Blink?
Blink. So, but it would be a different world, right?
Sure.
So I always thought that it was. I think that open source needs to be considered as part of a strategic decision. Maybe you want to open source it because it's helpful for the community to help you build some pieces. You build a foundation and people build audience or extensions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you want your technology to have reach. Sometimes you want that open source to drive customers to your products. Like the Azure Mobile Services Stack, for example, is a great example. Mm-hmm. They open source all the technology so that it's very easy for you to consume Azure services. And the libraries might not be exactly what people need. People might need to tune them up. They might need to make changes. Like, for example, we had to make changes to run on iOS and Android. Mm. So we forked that version. We've been working with Microsoft along those lines. Microsoft used async. We didn't have async 3 months ago, so we needed to have a version now. So that shows, for example, that it was a great strategy because people could use Azure Mobile Services and it's something that you guys didn't have to do. You didn't have to hire a guy to do iOS and Android for us. You didn't have to do QA that thing somebody else did, right? Exactly. So I think that open source plays a strategic role, and you should take it to our advantage. But it's definitely not the hippie feeling of 1999 when we told Red Hat, "Hey, we're on this together," and that was we very quickly learned that we were not on this together.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood, man. But you know, I still a lot of people, including myself, and a lot of people in Microsoft, Visual Studio people at Microsoft, Windows Azure. We respect what you do, and it's great to see this. The evolution of Xamarin is incredible. Now, during your keynote today, you made several announcements. We already talked about one.
Yeah.
The other one was the C# 5.0 async support,
right,
which got a rousing, like standing ovation, almost clapping, and First of all, there were a lot of people in the room, and a lot of clapping went on today. So that's always a good sign in keynote.
Yes, it is a good sign.
So C# 5.0 async, you guys did some rocket science with your compiler, because that's a compiler feature. Talk to me a little bit about that.
So the substrate of that is was that we are upgrading our entire development stack from a version of Mono that is about 2 years old, very, very solid, but it's 2 years old, two and a half years old, to the latest version, which is Mono 3.0. And that includes C# async, it includes new garbage collector, new APIs. There's a whole universe of new things, the task parallel library, task data flow library, system JSON. It's all over the place. So that really was the announcement. But if you talk about that, it's kind of an obscure topic. Async is really what people have been demanding. Mm-hmm. It's probably the biggest feature of the latest version of .NET. And I really love Microsoft vision here, which is if an API takes more than 50 milliseconds, you should not offer a synchronous version, just an async one, right? Push people through the API to build better applications. Mm. So not only we're doing C# async, we're actually asyncifying our APIs so that you can use iOS APIs with async. So right now I think we're up to 300 iOS-specific async APIs. So you can take advantage of async stuff specifically on iOS, and we have another 300 to go. Because the end result needs to be fantastic, right? So so it was actually a larger announcement, but async is probably what people really.
That was the sexy. That was the fish that you threw out. But there's interesting things about async, and we're discovering this as well. So whenever you have a new feature.
Yeah,
I think it's fair to think, when do I actually want to use async versus maybe a library that makes more sense?
Absolutely. Yes. I agree. The example that I showed today, it's a simplified version of the actual code that I put in TweetStation. And it was spaghetti code. You end up writing spaghetti code. Mm-hmm. And the thing that it was really the worst is really error handling. Like I said today in the keynote, at one point, I was kind of deep down in callbacks, and you get an error back from the server, and kind of you just throw your arms and say, all right, just report an error to the user, whatever it is. Technically, what I should have done is, hey, it's an authentication problem. Mm. Make the user re-login. But at that point, I'm so deep down, I haven't really passed the information down to the right layer. And I don't think that anybody sits down to write code that way. It's just, it's the way that you organically build it. So as you organically develop, you end up with these situations. I have these blog posts that I'm talking about error handling, not related to async, but you know, I show some code that if you look at it and you say, well, I wouldn't write it that way. Well, no, if you know all the parameters to begin with, you wouldn't do it that way. But what happens is that you start and then you evolve the code and you refactor it. And what happens is that this thing keeps growing until there's a point where there's API contracts to maintain, things to do. And so you end up writing code that your wish was different.
Yeah.
And async kind of released me from a lot of that pain. And made it a lot simpler to actually deal with that problem.
Absolutely. Those guys did great work, and async is a wonderful feature. Now you can use it across platforms. So that's, you know, number one, I think that's one of the greatest things that you've done with your work is that you've taken a good idea and a solid technology, and you've made it accessible to more than just, made it accessible to more than the 9 million people that are using it targeting Windows.
Right.
You've used it for democratizing, I guess, how could we describe it? Democratizing C Sharp?
I like
Very
that.
Very interesting.
I like that. But, of course, kudos to the whole team. Everybody involved in async was, you know, thank you very much, guys. I know, Mads, Anders, Eric, Don Syme, of course, who pioneered async in F Sharp.
Absolutely.
We shouldn't forget that. It's Don has got to be one of the most interesting people at Microsoft to talk to. It's I mean, every time I talk to him, it's like I walk out of the room with hundreds of ideas. I just wish I could talk more to him, but you know, he's in Cambridge and
he is.
I'm on the other Cambridge.
Exactly.
We're two Cambridges away.
So, you know, speaking of which, another announcement you made today, of course, I guess we touched on it a little bit, was F Sharp support.
Right.
For Xamarin.
Yeah.
Another massive ovation. Why did you do that?
So there's a personal part of me that likes it, but there's also a lot of people are starting to look at F Sharp for building better code, program with less errors. And what is interesting about F Sharp, I don't know how this happened, but Microsoft open sourced F Sharp, and that was fantastic. But they didn't just open source F Sharp 2, and people thought, well, they're never going to maintain it. Then they open sourced F Sharp 3, so they followed up with everything new. So type providers are there. And what is very interesting is that then, I don't know who was involved in this, but there was a foundation created, the F Sharp Foundation. Yep. And it's actually a very strong foundation. It is a very active group. So they invited me to be part of the F Sharp group, and you know, I monitor all the changes they do to the website. I get my GitHub notifications. They host F Sharp in GitHub, and there's an organization in GitHub. So I get all the notifications, and it is so nice to see F Sharp get this amount of attention from the community, people sending pull requests, people having discussions about the language, the future, the libraries, where should this go, improvements to the tooling. So it is a fantastic community on the one hand. On the other one is I've always been fascinated by functional programming, and I started with Scheme, with the structure interpretation of computer programs, one of the most beautiful books. Even if you're a seasoned developer and you already know how to write programs, I think that everybody should read the SICP. It's called Structure Interpretation of Computer Programs. So I've always been fascinated with that, and what both Lisp and F Sharp share in common is, I don't know how to express this, but I've noticed that when you're writing code in those languages, you tend to refactor so much more. I don't know what it is in the language that you always create these little tiny functions, right? And with C Sharp and maybe Python and Ruby, you kind of just grow the functions. So you tend to make your functions more featureful, while in F Sharp you tend to immediately, oh, this is a pattern, you take it out, this is a pattern, take it out. So you make all these little individual functions. So I don't know what it is. I was actually discussing with some friends. I don't know what happens in my brain that when you're writing Lisp or F Sharp, you tend to do this thing where you extract all these idioms outside. So there's that element. Code is, of course, shorter. It's nice to write less code, right? Like, nice to type less. Mm-hmm. And personally, I'm fascinated with the fact that this thing called pattern matching, right? Mm. The fact that F sharp helps you write better code by removing null from your vocabulary. It kind of doesn't let you do it, right? It's like, we're so used to using null everywhere, and F sharp just doesn't let you. I would like, no, you can't, right? and when you're like, oh, I can use this. It's like, actually, no. The language is going to force you to deal with the situation where you have no values. Mm. So there's a lot of people interested in this, scientists in particular. I come from a scientific background. My parents are scientists. I was raised among scientists. I work at science institutes for many years. So it's a language very well suited for those people. Turns out that the finest people love this because you get less bugs and things like that. So anyways, F sharp is another language that I love. And you know, since the beginning of .NET, this idea that you could have multiple languages on the same VM was something that really spoke to me. And in part because of the work that I had done on Linux to do multiple language integration with the same API. So .NET was that thing for me. So we're very happy about F-sharp, and we're going to keep adding interesting languages that people like. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, hey, I know you have to go. It's been great talking to you. And
thank
congratulations
you
on Xamarin, man.
Thank you.
Very interesting technology. I love the fact that you're supporting cross-platform, not just at the, you know, you're supporting at the IDE level, such that I, as a developer, can use whatever IDE I happen to like the most.
Right.
So if I'm a Visual Studio person, I'm not left out of the equation. I'm not forced to learn a new one.
Like I said, we believe and we know that most C# developers, their habitat is Visual Studio. So we want to make sure that they, we want to pamper them in their own habitat. We don't need to take them out of the rainforest to work with them.
Excellent.
So what we've done is we've taken C# across all platforms. We expose the base class libraries from .NET, so you'll get a familiar API. But what we've done in each platform is we've projected the native APIs into C#. So you can use the iOS APIs on iOS, the Android APIs on Android. Sony has done that for the PlayStation Vita, so they surface the PlayStation Vita APIs to C#, and so on. And so what you need to do is your business logic can be shared across all platforms. You can have the equivalent of PCL components across all platforms, talking to your Azure mobile services, talking to Parse, you know, storing your data in Dropbox. And then you have you have to build a UI that is native each platform. Like we showed today. We showed our applications that actually show a native Windows 8 experience, our native Windows phone experience, a native Android experience, a native iOS experience. So your applications don't look alien everywhere. So we don't believe in we don't believe in write once, run anywhere. Write once, run anywhere just means it looks terrible everywhere. So we're not believers in that. You know, I think it's an interesting shortcut. And if people have a need to have an app today, they might want to go down that route. But like Eric Singh has said on very brilliantly on his blog, the problem with mobile apps, the bar for quality is much, much higher. iOS really has driven that bar to the top. So if you're building with cross-platform solutions, with cross-platform UI solutions, you're not doing your users a favor much, and even worse, you're not making your shareholders any favors.
Yep.
You're just sinking your company. So if you gotta ship something cross-platform right away, go ahead, but you need to start with a native app stat.
You're right.
Because the experience matters a lot. And the pace of innovation on the Android SDK and the pace of innovation on the iOS SDK are tremendous. And there's really nothing on cross-platform UI libraries that are going to help you there. So that is the approach that we take. We said we're not going to abstract the UI because abstracted UIs are not going to give you the fidelity of the platform. And that is our approach.
Absolutely, and I think you're 100% correct.
Thank you very much.
And you're also going to be, when iOS is going to release their SDKs, their updates, Android is, you're going to be lockstep there because you're going to have to implement them.
That is what we do. That is what we do.
Absolutely.
We pride ourselves on delivering our SDKs within 24 hours of Apple and Android shipping them. So,
rock and roll, man. Yeah, well, hey, you guys are a team of great developers, and I look forward to learning a lot more about Xamarin over the next few days.
Thank you very much.